read me romance, read, read me romance, read me romance, read, read me romance. You could take a look in a book, that's fine, or you could sit back, relax and unwind and read me romance, read, read me romance.
Hello out there, lady listeners.
Hi.
Hey. And the dick demographic. Which is what we're calling the male listeners now.
What?
Do we have male listeners?
Do we have to do it? Who voted on this? Was there a poll? Like, I didn't see that.
Somebody posted in... Okay, so dick during my one of my, like, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday episodes, I was...
You fucked us up. Is that what you're saying?
Well, people keep writing in saying that, yes... That's what I'm saying. People keep writing in talking about how they, like, you know, sat down with their husband and, like, played a dirty episode and then it, like, got their bedroom rocking. And so, like, I was like, so we have male listeners now. And so I asked them, I was like, send me your suggestions for what we should call them. Like, male listenersters. Like, I was just coming up with the dumbest things. And then somebody came in on, like, Read Me Romance headquarters and was like, dick demographic. And I was like, wow, you're hired.
Wow.
So.
Oh my God. I don't think I can make my mouth say that. Dick demographic.
They're out there. Like, they're out there and they're listening. So.
Okay. I apologize on behalf of the people that don't like that.
I'm just going to keep pushing it, obviously, because that's what I do.
Obviously,
I'm
yeah,
just going to bait it into the ground.
This is just going to keep on going, so okay.
Okay, we're here this week to listen to Between Now and Forever by Dylan Allen, the fabulous Dylan Allen. I, like, talked to her this morning. She sent me a voice message this morning on Facebook Messenger because she was on her way into a panel at a PolyCon, and she was like, and she hadn't emailed me about her sales yet, and I was like, oh my God, her voice, like...
Oh, how nice.
She's talking to me. So she's so sweet. And this book was really sweet, like, and super romantic. It was High School Sweethearts. It is High School Sweethearts. You guys are going to hear it. And it's like, obviously, a wrong side of the tracks kind of star-crossed lovers romance that like, they just don't connect. And then he goes off and becomes a famous rock star, like, the audacity.
I can just see her face, like... If she was on the podcast and she was telling you about this book, I could just see, like, her putting her hands together in front of herself and being like, okay, listen, because she is just, like, the most sweet and, like, overly just smiley and happy and loving, and God, she's wonderful. If you haven't had the chance to meet Dylan Allen, she's incredible, and you really should. If you can go to a signing and meet her, do it.
Okay, I'll do it.
Have you not met her? Have you not met her in person?
No, before? I feel like I go to signings though, and I just, like, see four people I know. I don't out of my way.
I was gonna say, we didn't meet her until we went to Sky Warren's thing in Texas. When we went to that, they had the author mastermind. She was there, and that was when we were casting for season one, I think, maybe.
Yeah, we talked
to her.
Were we
still asking?
Yes.
Yeah, I think we were still casting for that, and I was like, and Kennedy Ryan was there, and I went up to her and, like, talked to her and stuff, and you were like, hey, if Dylan's there, like, you know, tell her something, and I had just heard in my head that Dylan had agreed to do the podcast, and I was going to go thank her for doing it, and I was like,
oh,
awesome.
That's right.
And so I go up to her and I'm like, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Like, it was incredible. It really means a lot to us. Like, you know, especially, you know, she's an awesome author. She's a woman of color. And, like, you know, we really wanted to have that feature on the podcast and have all these great voices. And she was like, uh-huh. She was just smiling the whole time. And she just nods her head. And then she was like, wait, what? I was like, so we want to ask you to be on the podcast.
We haven't asked her yet.
I know. And so I guess, like, you had asked me to, Tessa had asked me to talk to her and to see if she would be interested in being on the podcast. Not that she had agreed to it. And so I was like, so do you know what Read Me Romance?
I think we just got lost in the chain because I'll, like, point somebody out because I'm shyer. I'll be like, that's the person we need to talk to, Leah. Go. But I didn't.
And I'm like, okay, great. I got this. Fall off a cliff.
Wait, I was sending you guys pictures of people to talk to because you were like, send me a picture of whoever you want me to go talk to at this thing. So I was just sending you four, five, six pictures of authors. I was like, go talk to her. She's got red hair.
And bless Dylan's heart, she was so gracious about it. And she, but then she's sneaky too, because she was like, okay, so Kennedy Ryan told me, but then she told me it was in the vault and told me not to tell anybody. So yeah, I know what it is. And I was like, okay, good.
In other words, how so, everything gets communicated in this.
Yeah,
industry.
Exactly. She was like, well, she told me not to say anything.
Okay, don't tell anybody.
So I know. She was like, well, she told me not to say anything, but she totally told me. But yes, I want to do the podcast. And I was like, okay, good. Now,
I think
let's
Tess
go back
has said
to
that. She's like, she probably knows because they're really good friends.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. So Dylan, I'm just going to read her profile really quick. Dylan Allen is a Texas girl with a serious case of wanderlust. A self-proclaimed happily ever junkie, she loves creating stories where her characters chase their own happy endings. When she isn't writing or reading, eating or cooking, she and her family are planning their next adventure. So she
sounds... follow her on Instagram because she posts these sweetest pictures of her family up there. Yeah. It's so sweet. Like, I just feel like I know them. And I know her. So, I mean, we've met one time, you know, but I feel like I know her. And she's so sweet and bubbly. And she always has like really positive messages to put out there. So if you're on Instagram, go follow her.
Yeah. And this book made me feel really positive. Like it was just.
Yeah.
I
that's just how she is.
It was I don't know. It was just, it reminded me of like something I would have read and like read as one of my first novels where I just loved that, like, the heroine had been through a rough time and the hero was 100% faithful and just, like, loved her despite everything. And, like, I loved that when I was...
I know.
And it brought me back to, like, my first, I don't know, like, my roots
The faithful man. Like, there is nothing more attractive to me than a faithful man.
Yeah.
Like, that's just...
Well, I don't know if he was, like... Well, he was faithful to their love. I'll
yeah,
say that
yeah.
Much.
That's what I mean.
But it had been a long time since they'd seen each other.
So. Yeah.
But I really liked it a lot. And yeah, so we're here to play the first installment of that today. If you're here because of Dylan Allen and you haven't listened to the podcast before, we basically break up the audiobooks into 5 different sections and we play one each day, Monday through Friday. And then on Friday, you get the ending, the happily ever after ending. So we're going to chat for a while. I've got some amazing wedding proposal stories and one that is the funniest. It's the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life. I'm like, you guys are going to die.
I can't wait to hear this.
I read it this morning and I was like, I almost missed it. It would have been a huge missed opportunity. But first, I want to ask you guys, how was your week?
Before we get to this really awesome stuff that I just teased you with, let's talk about more.
Tell me about your week. Yeah.
So last weekend, we had the roller skate party for my daughter's 8th birthday. And cool fun fact, on roller skates now, you can buy a bottom at Walmart, but they're adjustable sizes. So like the foot size moves. And you can go, it's like, I got her like a size 3 to 6. And then the bottom of them changes out from regular wheels to rollerblades. Like,
oh.
And they were relatively inexpensive. I was like, I think they were like $40 or something. I was like, this is fucking awesome. And they were hot pink. She lost her shit. It was like, I was like the hero of the birthday with that. So, yeah. By the way, that's a great idea.
It looked like a fun party. Pictures I saw.
It was a good time. It was a good time. I always cry when we sing happy birthday to her or to either one of my daughters. Like, I don't know why. I just get really emotional, like, when everybody's singing happy birthday to her because it's like, it's another year, you know? And like, I should not get so upset about it. And I'm not sad, but it's just like such a special thing. And it's such a special day. And I'm just really emotional because I think back to the day I had her and all these people are around her that love her so much. And, you know, and so I don't know why I'm so emotional.
I think it's because of their facial expression and their body language when people are singing them happy birthday is so like, this is me.
Yeah.
I'm,
yeah.
This is my moment. Yeah. Uh-huh. And they look so happy. Like, they genuinely look happy.
She was like jumping kind of like, and like, you know, like kind of like moving her shoulders, like,
yeah.
And then she reached out and hugged me.
Aww.
Like when they were singing to her.
Like spontaneously?
Yeah. I was like, yeah. Oh, I was like, I mean, okay. Like, it's just our moment right now, I guess.
Mel, did you cry this week over anything?
Did you cry this weekend, Mel?
I should have cried. I went to a steakhouse and it was terrible.
Oh, no.
That's a little cry-worthy.
Oh, that's... Why was it so bad?
I guess it just wasn't that great. So when I was eating, I was like, yeah. It was date night, but I had two good restaurants back to back before, so I was due for a shitty one.
How do you mess up a steak? I mean, like, you know, you got to do a couple of sides and a steak right. You know, like, it's not like you're doing anything elaborate. I don't know.
And then, Tessa, what'd you do this week? Oh, well, I was going to, sorry, Mel, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that Thick hit number one.
Alexa Riley's book Thick hit number one in the entire Kindle store. That includes everything. Like, that includes books from presidents, books from celebrities,
like real books, like actual real love books. It was number one. I even said that, I think, in one of our posts where I was like, I couldn't believe it. And I was like, we knew that there's a lot of dirty romance readers, but enough to put us at number one for like,
this just goes to show you, like, going back to our conversation about being like shamed for reading romance. Everybody's fucking reading romance.
Don't
let people tell you that it's like some weird affliction that you have that you like reading romance.
Yeah.
Look how many, it beat Obama.
I know, right?
Think of all the people that wrote books that more people are reading romance, and, like, granted, it's, like,
a few people have asked us, authors, of what we're doing. We didn't do anything different, I swear.
No, nothing different. I know people are like, well, what did you run on your ads? What did you link to? What did you click when you uploaded your book? The same thing we do every single time. I mean,
duplicate. I just hit duplicate on everything.
Just the same thing. But I will say, too, that this is the fourth time in 5 years we've hit number one. This is, and again, we never know when this is going to happen. This is a complete, an utter shock to us every time. But there's no difference in how we do this, no difference in, like I said, what we click when we upload, the ads we run. Like, I mean, if anything, the only time we ever changed ads is you said when Sky Warren was helping you out with, like, you know, different ways to target ads and stuff. But again, that hasn't made a difference since we started doing it, you know, like. So I don't know. Like, it's such a fluke that it happens. But I think it has a lot to do with, personally, the time of the month and what other books you're competing against.
I also think Read Me Romance, you guys out there helped us.
Oh,
we
for
talked
sure.
about Thick on here, the word Thick, and you guys inspired it.
Yeah. Because we even said on one podcast episode, I think, when I was talking about how much we like the word Thick, and I was like, we should just name a book that. And then, like, the next week, we found this cover picture, and I was like, well, that's what it is, obviously. And the cover photo is so good. But I do think, you know, and we've talked about this before as well, is where I said, you know, somebody said that if you give them a specific instance in a book, the peacock one. In that book where they had, like, the
Ella Fox's
peacock.
Book.
Yeah, Ella Fox's book. So it's like, if you give somebody a detail like that, like a funny detail or something really specific about the book, they're more likely to be invested in this book and want to read it. And so when we talked on the podcast about Thick, we were telling you, you know, Mel and I were telling Tessa about this book, and Tessa's reaction is just, you know, the entire time, and how fun this sounds.
Well, no, I think the part where I was like, I would read an entire book just to read this one paragraph is you're like, he can't fit his dick inside of her, so he puts the tip in and just jacks the rest off. And I was like, what? And that's like the whole premise of the book. I mean, I was sold based on that, so.
But it's even like that detail, like talking about it, like it made people, I think, want to listen or want to read to it, you know, just hearing us on Read Me Romance. So I think was a huge part.
I know Leah killed me yesterday. She texted me and she's like, you know, this heroine in this book, Thick, she makes stuffed animals. And I like almost died because I completely forgot.
I told her that. No, I text Mel and I said, I just need you to take a second, just stop what you're doing and recognize that our book right now that's number one, the heroine designs stuffed animals for a living. Just let that sink in. That book is number one right now. Don't tell me people don't like stupid shit. Like, it's awesome. Like, this is the most ridiculous fun thing we can think of. I think
people want escapism, and they want, you know, and it just proves it. And that's it, you're providing it. So congratulations on that. Congratulations on being number one. I had a weird week. I got sick. My daughter was sick and I was sick. And we've like literally just been
sick. Sound like you had the plague. You were like, everybody's dying.
She would go like this. She'd be all like, dying. She'd be like, I'm not doing this. I'm done for the day. I'm sick. And then we'd ask her questions. She's like, I'm up. I'm doing it now.
I know. I really tried to just be like, I'm sick and I'm going to lay here in bed all day, but I couldn't do it. I just ended up getting showered and dressed and then just being miserable.
Just power through it.
But we did spend 2 days of like literally just sitting, my daughter and I sick, sitting on the couch in the pitch black watching endless Marvel movies.
Oh, yeah, because you started from the beginning. Tell me, because as a person, I've never watched Marvel movies.
Okay.
No, I don't watch them. No. I don't like superhero
movies. No, that's what I said. Okay. I'm obviously passionate about this. So I've taken my daughter to see Black Panther and Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel because I like
Okay, I'll stop you right there. I did see Black Panther and I did see Wonder Woman and I like those okay. I thought they were pretty good.
I always take her to see them if there's like women especially that are kicking men's ass because I think
Captain Marvel like was great with that.
Captain Marvel
My husband took the kids to see that one because I was working, but he said it was really good. He was like, you'll like
it's
it.
It's very good. And like I said, it takes place in the 90s and there's a 90s soundtrack and it's like,
oh,
it's so good.
It took me back, man. All the songs in that movie.
It did. Like, Chasing Waterfalls and like TLC and I'm Only Happy When It Rains and like all these kind of grunge era songs. And it made me so happy. And like it. One of the main features of it is a Blockbuster video, and it just made me feel like super nostalgic.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
My kid, like, she was sitting there with my husband, and my husband said when he got there was some people we knew in the row in front of him, and I guess that scene came up, and he texted me during the movie, he's like, you're not going to believe this. He was like, our daughter, he's like, she looked at the screen and was like, Blockbuster video, what's that? Really loud? And like, everybody around them just started cackling, because she didn't know what it was.
My daughter asked me this week while we were watching Iron Man. No. We were watching the first Thor movie, and she asked me, somebody referenced an iPod, and she goes, what's an iPod?
Oh, shit.
So, yeah, my 7-year-old, she had no idea what an iPod was. And I was like, my God, that feels like it was 5 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
So tell, all right, back, so superhero, though, like, sell me on these movies. Like,
okay.
What's the big deal?
Okay. What I love so much about it, and I was like you about a week ago, I was like, I don't like superhero movies. I don't like it. Yeah. It's just not my thing. I like real people having real drama. And then I started watching them. Like, my husband randomly put on Infinity Wars, which if you are going to start with a Marvel movie, don't start with Infinity Wars. It's it's like cliffhanger ending. I don't want to give anything away, but it's a cliffhanger ending and it leaves you really emotionally raw and invested. My daughter like couldn't even sleep because it was like,
oh my God. No, me and my son cried in the theater. We're like crying.
Yeah, no, I
next
was really
close.
If I watched it now, having watched all these Marvel movies, yes. I would have absolutely started sobbing.
We're like sobbing in the theater. Yeah.
So just selling it real hard here. But so I went back and I was like, now I'm emotionally invested. I have to hear all these stories. I have to figure out like what all the dynamics are about between all these superheroes because they're super complicated. It's not like, okay, he's strong and he has to fight the bad guy. And there's all this interpersonal drama happening between all the superheroes. And they all have these like really dark pasts and origin stories, obviously, which is the whole basis of superheroes. But like, I don't know what, like Black Widow is in every single one of them, which I knew she was in them, but she is the baddest ass character.
Is that Scarlett Johansson?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
She's awesome.
And I knew she was in them, but she is so good in them. Like, amazing.
I don't know. I still feel like it's such a time commitment. I'm like, I'm going to have to go back and start from the beginning.
Yeah,
like,
it's a huge time commitment. There's like, each of them each have their own separate franchise, and they're like at least 3 movies long. Like Thor has 3 movies. Spider-Man obviously has at least two. And then
I think I saw like the first Iron Man when it came out like years ago, but I didn't really, I mean, it was okay.
Iron Man is the greatest character. He's so funny. Well, yeah, I can see why he wouldn't appeal to you, Mel, because he's kind of like, well, he's a playboy and he's kind
of.
It's
not that. Well, obviously, if I'm Team Captain America, I'm not going to be a giant Iron Man fan.
Oh, Captain America?
Yeah, so one of the dynamics is those two have, like, they butt heads, right?
They butt heads. Well, technically, the series comes down to, it's actually, if you step back and look at it, it's political. The whole thing is political. And Iron Man is more of the, he wants to make a list. And of course, Captain America, who comes from the Holocaust, is just like, you want to make a what?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so this is where their battle begins.
Yeah, it's almost like Captain America's coming from a place where he's like the reminder of history. And like, he doesn't want to let them repeat history because it's so fresh in his head, but he can see it all happening again, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it just becomes political, but then they all have to come together. But I was going to say the thing about Captain Marvel is I really didn't know much about her when I went to go see the movie. But after seeing the Infinity War and then seeing her movie, did that movie make you feel better? Because I feel like she is now the savior. Like, this woman, not only is she a woman, but she's human. And she's going to come back in this war and she's going to be like almost godly, the savior of everything, it seems like.
Yeah, I'm really excited
that variant, I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, no, it's really exciting. And I don't know how to explain it. I've just really gotten into it. And
okay, so what should I start with? As someone who doesn't feel, like, where does it begin?
Okay, well, the best one so far is Thor Ragnarok, Mel, right?
No, I mean, but what do you start, what movie do you start with? I've never seen the Thors.
Okay.
So
Thor is really funny, and he's a good guy, so I would start with Thor.
I would start with the Thor movie. And okay, so Thor and Iron Man, I feel like, and Captain America, they're the first movies of all those three franchises are a good place to start. And then head into like an Avengers. And then maybe move on a little bit in the separate franchises and then go check out like the second Avengers.
I don't.
So there's no, what I'm hearing right now is there's no order. It's chaos. And my skin is crawling.
There is
right
an
now.
Order. I'll send it to you. Brighton okay. Walsh, one of our friends who's an author, was telling me that her family has watched it in chronological order. And I should have done that. I just hadn't. Yeah. So
I never watched movies, and I'll go to the movies to see Marvel.
Thor Ragnarok. Oh my God. We were just laughing so hard.
Yeah, that one's a hilarious movie.
And I feel like, though, if you have 7-year-olds, though, Iron Man isn't super appropriate. Like, the other ones are like really appropriate for kids, and I feel like when they made Iron Man, they hadn't taken that into account. His are just a tiny bit less appropriate, but I still let her watch them. I just covered her eyes a few times.
Was Iron Man first? Is that why?
Was he?
I feel like he might have been, but maybe
I think he was first.
It's hard with the way to keep redoing
it's been
Spider-Man.
Like, yeah. God, there's like 74 Spider-Man.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, don't. The Tobey Maguire ones don't have anything to do with this. You have to do the Tom Holland ones, yeah.
Okay.
All right. Moving on. okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to read a couple of proposal stories, but before we do that, I want to ask you how your husband's proposed. Do you want to tell me that?
Yeah, like, I think I've already done mine, though, didn't I?
Have you?
I think we have.
No, it's okay. Like, real quick, I was at a wedding. I was super drunk. He proposed outside in the rain. He didn't have a ring. It was great.
No, you did not tell me that.
No, I didn't hear that. I definitely didn't hear that.
I really feel like we talked about
this. I feel like we talked about mine.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Okay,
we talked about how you guys met. We've talked about how we've all met our husbands. I don't think we've talked about proposals.
Okay, I'll start. So my husband and I, we met at the Irish bar called Conley's in Greenville. It was like a couple years later, we went to a wedding, a friend's wedding, and the wedding reception was kind of across the street from this bar. So I was at the wedding and we were super drunk, and my best friend LB was there, and Kevin had told her not to let me drink. He was like, you know, try to, you know, keep her low key. You know, I want to try to propose tonight. And she's like, all right, I'm on it. And I was like 7 or 8 vodka and cranberries in. And she brought me a drink from the bar, and there was no vodka in it. And I was like, what is this? I was like, you're cutting me off. Like, I got so pissed off. I was like, it's a wedding. Like, we had gotten a room at the hotel. Like, you know, we were there to party. Like, this is, you know, obviously pre-kids and everything. Like, I was, you know, in my mid-20s, I was ready to do it up. And so she was like, okay, number one, how do you know there's no vodka in that when you've already had like seven drinks? So, and then she was like, look, I'm not going to fight you on this, but I just think you should sober up. And I was like, fuck you. Like, fuck you. I went to the bar. I got a shot of vodka, like, just to prove a point. And my husband was like, here we go. So, anyways, so afterwards, we go across the street to the pub. And again, I still had no idea at this point. And he takes me outside, and it's raining, and outside the bar is like this little alcove, and he pulls me into it, and he's like, and he just looks at me, and he's like, I tried to, for you to not get drunk tonight. He was like, I didn't want you to drink too much because I want to propose to you. And he gets down on one knee, and again, he doesn't have a ring or anything. And he's like, I'm asking you to marry me. I love you. I want you to marry me. And I was like, shut the fuck up. Like, that was my response to him. So, yeah, it was really sweet. It was a great proposal. I love it. So, yeah, I said I do.
That's beautiful. Mel, do you have one? Obviously, you have one.
I really kind of don't. Mars was more like, I've said before that I adopted or took custody of my niece, right? So, in the midst of all that, we'd been together like 5 or 6 years and had a kid together. I was like, I think we're going to have to get married, the lawyer said. He's like, okay.
Oh my God, that's exactly how we proposed. Because Pat, my husband's from Ireland, and he needed his green card. And like, we'd been together for 3 years, and we'd talked about getting married anyway. But I was like, we should just do this now. And then that way we can go to Ireland. Because like, at this point, if we go to Ireland, you are not going to be able to get back into the country.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was it. It was just a conversation like while the TV was on.
That was pretty much ours. I was like, so we should just get married.
Yeah, the lawyer is going to tell us we need to be married. So
both of you proposed to your husbands is what I'm hearing.
I just told him we were getting married.
I think I did too. Yeah. I was like, we got to get married. Okay. I made an appointment. Wait, we're doing it next Saturday.
So, all right. So let's talk about the rings then. How did you pick out a ring since you didn't have the proposal?
We went to K Jewelers in Times Square.
Oh, that's kind of sweet.
Yeah, we just took the subway up to Times Square. We went in. I picked one within 15 minutes. I'm really not a picky person. It was in the shape of a heart. It's gone. I lost it.
No, how did you lose it?
I don't know. One day it was on my desk, and then I just was looking for it and I couldn't find it. And I still think it's going to turn up. It's been about 2 years, but I got a replacement wedding band for now.
Was it here in your house now? Or yeah. Was it your old place?
Yeah.
I wonder if the cat did it.
Probably.
Where like she knocked it off. You know what I mean? Like pawed at it.
Probably.
And now it's like somewhere.
Sounds like her.
Yeah. Or do you think like your daughter went in and was like, oh, Tori.
No, she's good about that kind of stuff. She knows.
Yeah. So you think it'll turn up somewhere?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, in the meantime, I have like a just kind of like a Celtic design wedding band that I kind of like That's better. Cool. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Mel?
We just went and picked it out.
You just went to a jewelry store and you were like, I like that one.
Pretty much. And now I'm thinking about replacing it because I never wear it.
Why?
Because it's like got a big diamond on it and stuff. I just want like a band.
Sounds ideal.
I mean, it sticks up. I don't like that it sticks up.
Yeah,
and it's
I know what you mean. It's really tall.
I just want something really light and that I don't notice at all. And I could hit it and not be like, oh, shit.
Yeah, mine would snag on everything. Like, anytime I put a shirt on or, like, if I was adjusting my bra, it would get stuck in there. Well, what about you, Leah? Do you have a nice... What is your ring like?
Well, yeah. So my husband, he didn't have a ring when he proposed because I was really close with my grandmother and she had given me the diamond that my grandfather proposed to her. They knew each other in grammar school and she hated him. He, like, walked through her marble game and like kicked her marbles and she was like, well, I don't like this guy. And so like she hated him when she was a kid, but they obviously grew up and they got married. But he didn't have much money. He was a mechanic and he saved up and he got her this little tiny diamond, and she gave it to me after he died. And she said, I just want you to have this. And she said, and I hope that one day that, you know, somebody will love you enough to give you this because it is filled with all his hope and all his love. I know, it was really sweet. So, yeah. So anyway.
Leah always has all this sentimental shit. We're just like, meh.
I know. I know. I do want to renew vows, though, at some point and do something nicer. Like, kind of.
Yeah. We talked about that.
Oh, yeah.
But I was just going to say, like, that was why he didn't have a ring that night, because he wanted to use that one.
That's
and
okay.
He couldn't,
yeah, that's good.
Yeah, he couldn't find it. And so he was like, I had taken it. Like, I guess he, at one point we had talked about getting married or something. And it, for some reason, I didn't put it back in the place where I usually did. And he couldn't find it to propose with. And so we used that for like the first couple years when we were married. And then until my grandmother passed away. And then when she did, I got the diamond that she wore, that he bought her later when he made more money. So, like, he kind of upgraded her a ring. So I ended up, I had that one reset. And then the smaller one I had put into a necklace because it was just like a little chip diamond. But yeah, I was afraid it would actually come out of the setting because it was really small. And so I had it made into a necklace. So I wear that.
Okay, I love that.
Yeah, I know. So that was kind of nice. And like the diamond I have now, I had it put in like an antique setting. So it's sort of mine, but it still kind of hurts too. And I really like that. So yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you guys want to read some proposal stories?
Yes. Okay. I love this shit.
So we're running long on time. So I'm just going to read three and then we'll read the rest on Friday.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Hello. My now husband is from Colombia, South America. So, you know, this is going to be good. He had my best friend ask me to lunch one Saturday. Unbeknownst to me, he had been working with my sister and best friend for weeks to plan this proposal. My best friend and I went to lunch, and at the end, the waiter brought a note and a rose. The note gave me a clue to go to the restaurant where we met. At that restaurant, the manager was waiting with another note and rose. It gave me a hint to go to my local bookstore. At the bookstore, the cashier gave me another note and a rose, and the note said to pick out any book I wanted, and it was already paid for. Best gift ever. Then the hint led us to the nail salon. At the nail salon, we got our nails done and read a note from my mom saying she had sponsored that part of the day and was very excited for me. Then another note and a rose with a hint that led us to a spot downtown. Every time I passed that spot, I had told my now husband that it was beautiful and I wanted to take pictures there. Another note and a rose. This time the hint led me to the park where we had our first kiss. There he was waiting for me on one knee with a circle of rose petals on the ground and stems spelling out, "Will you marry me?" He read a beautiful letter he'd written and asked me to marry him. It was an incredible proposal, and all the other people in the park thought so too. And then she sent me a picture of it. Can you guys?
Look, I've like got chills.
Isn't that sweet?
That is so sweet. I'm going to cry. Oh my God.
Little scavenger hunt.
I love that. Oh,
isn't that a good one?
Okay. I hope the... Wait, what are the dick... What are they called?
The dick demographic.
I hope they're listening.
Take note.
That is a solid proposal.
That's solid. Yeah.
I mean, you got your nails done. You got a book.
You got food.
Lunch.
Two restaurants.
What?
Yeah. Okay, here's another one. Hey, ladies. My marriage proposal story begins, as many do, with a dentist appointment. When he proposed, my now husband and I had been dating for 9 years and living together for 5, so I was just waiting for the ring at this point and didn't think he would be able to surprise me with a proposal. I had made a dentist appointment to get a crown done on a random Tuesday. I'd gotten off work an hour early and was just going to swing by home to change my clothes and brush my teeth before going straight to the dentist. As I stepped through my door, our entire apartment was lit with candles and framed photos of the two of us over the past 9 years. With my husband standing there holding a scrapbook that I had made as a present for our first dating anniversary. He got down on one knee and opened the scrapbook with the ring inside, asking if I was ready for our next adventure. Of course, I said yes.
Stop it.
After which he told me he had already called ahead and canceled my dentist appointment. We were married this past October.
I love it.
Oh,
isn't
love that
great?
Too. That's just so sweet. I want to hear horror wedding proposals too, by the way.
Oh, like, okay.
For people
I got you
who
covered.
Are listening, yeah, for people who are listening and rolling their eyes, okay, I want to hear those.
This one
too.
Has like, okay, well, it has a little bit of both.
Okay.
Hi, ladies. I saw your post about proposal stories. I actually have 5. That's right. I've been proposed to 5
what?
Times.
Oh my God.
By 5 different men. I honestly.
By 5 different. Man, that pussy's made of gold. Go for it.
I honestly don't know whether to be proud of that or just really embarrassed.
Be proud. That's awesome.
I know. Let your flag fly. I'll just give you a little taste of what I was working with. Proposal number one came while I was still in college. My high school boyfriend proposed in my dorm room freshman year. He couldn't even take me outside to ask. I said no. I said no, it didn't feel right. He should have dumped me then, but for some reason he decided to stick with me, and I didn't have the heart to say no and dump him. I mean, I'm not a monster. LOL, it was awful, though, because he had warned everyone he was asking, so all night he got messages from friends asking about it. We broke up a year later.
Oh, a year? Jesus.
You really hung in there.
Yeah, you really tried to see that.
No resentment there that entire time. Mm-hmm. Proposal number two came while I was sick as hell with a head cold, sitting on a bed wearing a ratty sweatshirt and barely comprehending what was happening. It was December 30th, not even New Year's Eve. He claimed he couldn't wait another day. He should have.
This is great!
Proposal number three was in Mexico. We took a beautiful vacation, and I commented on the fact that the sunset was pretty cool. I shit you not, his response was, you know what else is pretty cool? And he brought out the ring.
No. Oh, that's the worst pun ever.
It's terrible.
Or I don't even know. Like, oh, God.
I still don't know why I said yes to that one.
Oh, she said
I know.
Yes to
no
that
follow
one.
Up on that. I don't know what happened there. Proposal number four happened while I was vacuuming the bedroom. Could you turn that down for a minute?
Oh no!
Queen quotation marks. Down on one knee, propose, boo. That one actually got me down the aisle, only to end in an epic divorce soon after.
Oh shit!
And finally, to the best one, my current husband. I finally found a man who paid attention. He took me for a trail ride. I'm obsessed with horses, and proposed while we were out in a field. He had a beautiful ring, and he said thoughtful words, which I can't remember now, but the sentiment remains. Then he took me to a secret dinner that he planned with my brother, who he knew would be the first person I would want to tell. Still brings tears to my eyes because he truly thought about what would be special to me, in capitals. Maybe you'll read this on the podcast and maybe you won't, but I wanted to tell you that I love everything you do. Tessa, I've been borderline inappropriately obsessed with you and your writing since Entangled first launched. It's Brazen Line, and I met Ginger. Thank you for your characters and your stories. And ladies, I honestly sometimes listen to the podcast just to hear you three talk.
Aww, yeah. That's so sweet.
I love you.
Oh, that's the best. That was a good one.
That was
I
a good
really
one.
Like that.
All right, and like the piece de resistance one, I'll keep it till Friday. But everybody,
no, people are gonna murder you.
Okay, are you serious? Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can't make them wait that long.
Okay, here it comes.
Oh God.
Okay, and I know this girl, and I've met her husband, and I can picture this, and it's, and I won't say her name, but my God, this, okay. Our proposal story used to embarrass me. I didn't want to admit it to anyone, or even have him tell anyone. Things have changed years and years later, and now we find it hilarious. Our families and children and future grandchildren will never know the real story, but some of our friends know the truth, and now all the lady listeners out there could hear it too. Our dating had started out really just a drunken fooling around, having fun, having mutual friends, roommates at the time. But after a few months of denying we actually liked each other, we gave in and decided to give it a real go. At the time, he was a diesel mechanic. This detail comes into play soon. And after almost a year, we started talking seriously about getting married. At this point, I knew he had gotten a ring. One night, we went out for a friend's birthday. After the bar partying, we went home. I was very intoxicated, so I went to bed. He was not intoxicated, but thought it would be a great idea to wake me up with a proposal. By tying the ring around his dick.
What?
Yes, he did. He woke me up in a drunken stupor by flopping his dick basically on my face with a red ribbon dangling an engagement
what?
Ring.
He wasn't drunk and he thought this was a good idea? What?
I love it.
What did I do? How did I respond? Well, I sort of swatted that thing out of my face and said, why would you put that on me? He instantly looked basically defeated, but still said, well, do you want to do this?
The ring or the dick?
Which one? I've been like, I wouldn't. Oh my God.
I groaned and just rolled over in bed. He became apologetic and instantly knew he'd screwed up. He said, "I don't know how to do this. I've never done this before. What do you want?" He was genuinely confused.
That's kind of adorable.
It is. If you. Okay. Like, if you.
That is kind of really adorable.
It is adorable.
What do you want?
I'm trying. Put it on my dick.
I put it on my dick. What do you? What else do you want?
What else could you want?
You know how long it took me to tie this bow? I had to look it up on YouTube.
He was genuinely confused. Me, being a not super romantic person, but also a person that doesn't want a dick proposal, said, "I don't know, something by the water? Not a bed on your dick." He let me go back to sleep after drunk sex, but woke me up a few hours later, really sweet. I love after all of that, she was like, "All right, fine, let's fuck."
All right,
and
fine.
I want to go back
you
to sleep.
You can put it in. Yeah. Fine.
But he woke her up a few hours later, really sweetly, got her into the car and drove us to this small nature preserve type place by our house. As the sun was setting, he got down on one knee at the top of a small waterfall and proposed with the ring not on his dick. I said yes. We pretty much used red ribbons as our inside joke for 12 years now.
Oh my God.
This is the greatest detail coming. Ready? Are you ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
It wasn't until years later that he admitted to me and friends that he had gotten the ribbon on his dick idea from the guys in the garage at work.
What?
Yeah, the other diesel mechanics threw out that suggestion. He actually took it seriously. In that same conversation, I learned that the red ribbon got yanked off a cat toy.
What? Are you shitting? He put a cat toy.
He didn't even go to Hallmark. He just found a cat
with
toy.
A wedding ring. Oh my God. How did he think this was going to be successful?
She says, in all caps, "Holy romantic Batman. Still married to him. 2 kids later. Lots of laughs. He's my own personal PMB, which stands for Pouty Man Bear. And I wouldn't change our proposal story for anything."
That is magnificent.
I told you guys. Was that worth the wait or what?
Oh my God. That was so good. My face hurts right now. Oh my God.
Okay. All right, you guys. We're here for Dylan Allen. You guys are going to love this. Here's the first installment. And we will catch up with you on the other side. That's okay. All right.
Yep.
Okay.
Bye.
We'll allow
Bye.
It. Bye.
Between now and forever. A River's Wild novella. Written by Dylan Allen. Narrated by Tracy Marks and Aaron Shedlock.
Chapter 1. Beth. "I have a surprise for you," my best friend Diana sing-songs as she rests her ample hip against the edge of the counter next to me. I only spare her a quick glance, but it's enough to see a huge grin splitting her bright red lips and mischief dancing in her eyes. My stomach drops. That expression never bodes well for me. She's got a wicked sense of humor, and pranks are one of her love languages. "Oh boy," I mutter, and turn down the heat on the roux I've been nursing for the last hour. "Don't be like that. You'll like this one. It's tall, handsome, and asking for you." She drawls, like she expects that to be an inducement. It's not. I sigh, turn the heat off, and turn to face her with my arms crossed and my expression stern. The last time anyone tall and handsome was asking for me, it was a service processor informing me that I was being sued by my crazy-ass parents. So you're gonna have to forgive me if I'm a little skeptical. "Oh, ye of little faith. I don't know why you're always expecting the worst." I scoff. "Because that's usually what I get. Now spit it out. I've been working on this roux all day, and if I leave it off the heat too long, the last hour I spent stirring it will be for naught." "God forbid," she gasps in mock horror, and I can't help but laugh, because I know that I'm obsessive when it comes to cooking, but I also feel like I've got a lot to prove. "Dina, just tell me," I say through my chuckle. Her smile grows even wider, and she squeals, a sound I haven't heard since we were tweens at our first Josh Groban concert. "Carter is here!" The laughter dies in my suddenly dry, tight throat, and I take an involuntary step back. Her words hit right in my gut, and I bring a trembling hand to my mouth and shake my head. "Please, don't play with me like that, Dina. You know how I feel about him." Her expression sobers, but her eyes still twinkle. "You know I would never," she says gently, and she gives me what I think is meant to be a reassuring smile. But it only makes my heart beat harder. But He can't be here, I whisper from behind my hand. She nods. Dread seeps into my blood, and with every beat of my heart, it grows. He is. He and his entire band just sat down and are placing orders for lunch. She tips her head toward the swinging doors of the kitchen. Oh my God, is it just a coincidence? I ask her, my tone making it very clear that I hope the answer is yes. Maybe, she says, and my knees nearly buckle with relief that she agrees. Oh, thank God, then maybe he'll leave and never know I was here. Too late, she says, her expression full of mischief again. You told him, I accuse her, and hit her with the towel that's been hanging from the waist of my apron. She laughs and scoots out of my reach. I didn't. Then how do you know he knows? I demand. Why else would he be here? I mean, our food is good, but it's not like Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives gave us a spotlight that would make it a pilgrimage destination for uber-famous out-of-towners. He could be eating anywhere, but he came all the way across town to eat at a diner that's really only patronized by residents of Rivers Wild. I shake my head in disagreement, in denial. You're forgetting that review in the New York Times last month. We've served more out-of-towners than ever since then. Everyone knows the rules drummer's a big foodie. It makes perfect sense that he'd come here. She crosses her arms and grins, like she can see through my facade of nonchalance. Okay. Well, how about this? He was madly in love with you in high school and left town promising to come back for you one day. She raises an eyebrow as if to say, how about them apples? My heart does a flip, and I see the moment like it was happening right in front of me, right now. It had been the worst day of my life. I push away the memory and try to minimize it with a flick of my wrist and some dismissive words. We were kids, all of us stuck in that place, and he was just saying it. He didn't mean it. Oh, Lizzie. She only calls me by the nickname she gave me when we were 5 years old, when she's trying to comfort me. It's fine. I'm fine, I lie, but it's mostly to myself. I know there's no fooling Dina. Her eyes soften with what looks uncomfortably close to pity. Really? I give her a wide smile, but inside I'm trembling. Carter is right out there, and I can't go to him. She puts a hand on my shoulder and turns me to face her. Lizzie, he asked to see you. My heart clenches, and I look over her shoulder at the door. He didn't, I gasp in total disbelief. He came back for you, she says slowly, like she's worried I won't understand otherwise. But I understand, perfectly. I just don't believe it. Not after all this time. Not when I just made peace with everything I lost. Her eyes are fixed on mine, watching me like she's afraid I'll run, her body tensed to give chase. No. Oh my God, I can't. I whisper and close my eyes to try to dam the tears that are pooling in them. You can. This is your chance. Don't say that, Dina, I snap, more angry than I realized, and she sobers. I will say it. She puts her hands on my shoulders and squeezes. And I'll keep saying it. I know you've had all the belief beat out of you, but I've got enough for both of us, and I'll strap you to my back and carry you out there if I have to. But either way, Carter isn't leaving here without getting the chance to see you. Her words thrill and scare me, because I want them to be true so badly. But I know better than almost anyone how bitter unrealized expectations taste, and so I don't allow myself any. Ever. I can't, Dina. You know I can't. She reaches up and runs the back of her hand over my cheek. Stop it, I hiss at her and step out of her hold. You're beautiful, she says insistently. My heart swells with affection and gratitude for her. You're a good friend, and I know you really believe that. I turn back to the stove to avoid seeing the sadness in her eyes. But by the rest of the world's measure, I'm not. I swallow down the bitterness that creeps into the edges of my sentence. On a normal day, the patchwork of scars on my left cheek barely registers with me. After a year, they're not as taut or angry, and only twinge or pull every once in a while. I'm only ever reminded of them by the lingering stares of discomfort when I meet someone for the first time, or innocent curiosity of a child who asks, "What happened to your face?" before their mortified mother can stop them. But right now, It burns like a spotlight has been cast on it, like a layer has been peeled off it, like it was just yesterday that the scar was carved into my face and changed my life forever. It doesn't matter how many times I'm reminded that it's a badge of survival. The platitudes about how pretty I still am leave me hollow. Nothing can alter the fact that I look nothing like the girl he said those words to 10 years ago. Those words were spoken in the heat of passion to a young, beautiful, happy girl. When we were in love. Or at least we thought we were, and thought our love would overcome everything. Back then, nothing felt insurmountable. No storm could penetrate the shelter we'd built with the feelings we developed in the short, blissful weeks we spent together, before everything fell apart. Until then, I'd never known anything but getting what I wanted. My bedroom was lined with blue ribbons. The shelves on my walls sagged under the weight of the trophies I won for everything from dance to debate. The 4 sashes I'd gained as homecoming queen every year of high school were my most prized possession. My boyfriend was the high school quarterback, prom king, and the handsomest boy in school. Every girl wanted to be me. All the boys wanted to be with me. I took it all for granted. I thought my life would always be golden. Until the summer Carter and I found each other. That's when I learned that even the purest, brightest, most precious treasure could be tarnished and end up being nothing more than bitter ashes, the aftertaste of which you can never quite get rid of. I lost him, lost myself, and it took nearly losing my life to give me the courage to walk away from everything I'd ever known and try to start again. In the darkest moments of my life since then, I recited Carter's parting words, "I'll be back for you," like a prayer. But just like every other prayer I ever uttered, they fell on the same deaf ears, and it's been a very long time since I hoped for anything more than survival. I want a quiet, pain-free existence that's as insulated from disappointment as possible. "Liz, are you okay?" Dina shakes me out of my meandering thoughts, and I focus on her worried eyes. "No, Dina, I'm not okay," I admit with a weary sigh. I nibble my lip and eye the door suspiciously. "How could he know I was here?" She shrugs. "Now that I can't tell you, but I can tell you that he looked like a kid on Christmas morning when I told him you were in the back." She waggles her eyebrows, and I blanch in horror. "You did what?" I shout. The loud din from the dining room muffles my words, but the rest of the kitchen staff look up from their work. Most of them shoot daggers at me before they get back to work. They all think the only reason I'm here is because Dina and I are best friends, and they resent my promotion up the cooking line. They're right. She hired me because I needed a job, and housewife isn't exactly a marketable job description. She's the restaurant's manager, and I can cook. So her boss, a very nice lady named Sweet, let her hire me. I work hard to make sure none of them regret it. I smile apologetically in their general direction and turn back to my room. "Why did you do that?" My whisper is sharp, my scowl deep and fierce. Anyone else would be taking a step back. Dina just smiles even bigger. "Because I'm not a liar. And this is your fucking chance." I smother the little ember of hope that her words are oxygen for. The girl I was is gone, and so is the boy who loved her. Carter's life has changed in ways that feel removed from my reality, that I can't imagine how he'd look at me and see anything he wants anymore. I glare at her and she shrugs, crosses her arms over her ample bosom, and tosses her head. The huge bun of chocolate brown curls sways beneath the cage of the hairnet she's got on. We all wear them, even when we walk onto the restaurant floor. It's Sweet's rule. Even if I wanted to see him, there's no way I'd let him see me looking like this. I always wear my hair over the scar. He's in town for 3 days, maybe. Then he's off again, and it'll be another 10 years before he comes back, I grumble and start stirring again. When Dina doesn't respond with her trademark sarcastic retort, I glance up. She's watching me intently and grinning like a drunk Cheshire cat. Are you okay? Oh, I'm great, she drawls cockily. You can forget whatever you're thinking. Even if he was really interested in seeing me, I'm not interested in seeing him. That's when I notice the rest of the kitchen staff are frozen in place. All of them have turned, and their gazes are all pointed to something over my shoulder.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that,
because I'm more than remotely interested, and I'm praying like fuck I can change your mind. Carter's resonant, deep, melodic voice floats through the air and wraps itself around me in an intimate embrace that's more tangible than any human touch I've experienced in years. I spin on my heels, and my knees nearly buckle when I find myself staring into the emerald green eyes of the Carter Page. He's every woman's wet dream. Tall, dangerously handsome, with a body nearly as famous as the voice that's made him the superstar that he is. But when I stumble into the pools of green that are trained on my face, I forget all of that and remember the kiss that changed my life. I'd been ready to throw everything away for the chance to have that kiss for as long as I drew breath. God, and despite how painfully it turned out, I'm certain I'd do it all again. Shocked by the total 180-degree turn my thoughts have taken, I take a step back and trip. I grab the counter to steady my fall. But it's not the counter my hand touches, but the blistering hot griddle I've been heating to toast the corn cakes. Oh, fudge cakes and damnation! I turn my back to him and cup my hand. I can't bite back the moan of agony as the pain in my hand balloons by the second. Lizzie, oh my God! Dina cups my elbow and leads me over to the sink. I move with her, despite the throbbing pain in my hand. I'm also hyper aware of the presence behind me. I don't need to turn back around to know how he's looking at me. I know his every expression. In my mind's eye, I can see the way his full, wide, light pink lips are flattened and turned down at the corners. I can picture his heavy dark brows slashed downward with worry. His glittering eyes are full of the tender concern that has captured the imagination of every woman with a pulse. Beth, he says softly as he comes to stand next to us at the sink that Dina's holding my hand over, while she runs a stream of cold water over the blistering palm of my hand. Goosebumps prickle my skin, and even though I'm breathing, hard and fast, I feel starved for oxygen. Beth? This time his voice is less certain, questioning, and I don't know what to do. But my eyes do, and without asking me for permission, they swing in his direction and land squarely on his face. I whimper, but not from the pain of the burn, but from the indescribably acute pang of longing that wells in my gut and fills my body when I finally let myself really look at him. I've spent countless hours watching him perform on television and on online clips I have saved in a special folder on Instagram. But none of those mediums do him any justice. In person, he's got a charisma that pulls me into him like a lasso wrapped around my waist. And even when I want to turn away, I can't. His eyes skim over my scar, and I brace for the wince or flinch that always comes when people see it for the first time. They widen slightly, but in the way they would if he was seeing a new dress for the first time, and then he moves on to the rest of me. I release the breath I'd been holding, and my shoulders relax. I take the opportunity to look at him, too. Last time I'd seen him, he'd been on the cusp of manhood. Now, he was the living, breathing, spectacular definition of it. From his short buzz cut to the carefully edged, close-cropped beard that's interrupted by a tiny scar in his chin. That imperfection is nearly identical to the one that bisects his right brow. Throw in his seemingly perpetual smirk, and he looked like a modern-day pirate. He's wearing a long-sleeved white dress shirt this evening, with the sleeves rolled up to reveal his now famous sleeve of tattoos, all song lyrics that adorn his muscular forearms. His face is leaner, his cheekbones sharper, his jaw more defined. And yet I can see the boy whose angelic voice held me in thrall for months. The boy who kissed me in the rain and then told me it was his first kiss and he hoped he'd never kiss anyone again because nothing could be as perfect as my lips. How he must have laughed once he started traveling the world and meeting real beauties who spoke beautiful languages and who weren't shackled by their parents' small minds or their small town's unforgiving demands. A gagging sound breaks the spell, and I peel my eyes away from the chocolate quicksand of his and turn to Dina, and almost gag myself when I see my hand. I close my eyes fast, but I can't unsee the flesh hanging off my hand and the pink and white flesh that's exposed by the melted skin. Liz, this looks bad. It's blistering already. Dina gags again and turns away. A strong hand wraps around my shoulder as I sway. The pain and the sight of the huge white circle on the fleshiest part of my palm proves to be the final straw on the drama-filled pile Carter's appearance dumped on my back. I got you, Beth. I got you. Carter whispers in my ear, and the tears of pain that were welling in my eyes don't sting so badly suddenly. His words are like a shot of analgesic sunshine straight into my veins. Every muscle in my body relaxes, and I sag back against his broad, muscular chest. For the first time in a long time, I lean on someone who I know would never let me fall. Carter, I can't leave the kitchen. I'll be down to cook as it is. Can you take her to my office? Dina speaks over my head like I'm not there. Of course, I'll take her. His response is quick, also over my head, and if I hadn't accidentally burned my hand, I would think they conspired together to make this happen. They both sound nearly cheerful. I shake my head and try to step out of his hold. When he doesn't let go, I look up at him, my vision clouded by pain, but determined not to set myself on a path that can only end badly for me. Didn't you come here to eat? You're with your band, right? I'm breathless, and my voice is tight with pain. I close my eyes against a wave of pain that starts to move up my arm. Carter wraps an arm around my shoulder and turns me so I can't avoid his eyes any longer. They pin me in place, and he lowers his head, and his breath is warm and sweet against my neck. I did come in with my band. They came to eat. I came for you. I've been waiting 10 years to hear those words. I fantasized about this moment for so long. But just in the last year, I let that fantasy go. Every time I looked in the mirror, I was reminded that no one would look at me and see the girl I'd been then. When I stopped looking like that, everyone I'd sacrificed my happiness to please had turned their backs on me. But here he is, looking at me like nothing had changed. And combined with the rush of pain in my hand and the shock of seeing Carter, my brain decides it's too much, and the last thing I see before I faint is the flash of Carter's hand as he reaches for me to break my fall.
Hey, lady listeners and Dick hey, Demographic, yeah. We're back.
I mean, we don't have to say both, do we? We don't have to say both every time.
I won't. Just for today. I mean, it felt like it was really fitting after that proposal story we told.
Oh my God.
All right, you guys, I know you want more Dylan Allen already, and he has a free book that's free for this week only. So it's called Rise. It's the first book in her Symbols of Love series, which is on Kindle Unlimited. But the first book is free for this week, so go snatch it up. We'll put the link in the episode description. She's also giving away a signed set of books of that series, the Symbols of Love series. They've all got new covers, and she really wants to show them off. So I'm sure we'll be posting that around on Instagram at Read Me Romance. Yeah, she's got basically all her books are on Kindle Unlimited. She's got a series called the Rivers Wild series, WILDE. And I think that this book takes place in that world. I'm not 100% certain, but I'm pretty sure.
Her covers are gorgeous.
They're gorgeous.
They're so pretty. We've shared them so many times on Alexa's page just because they're so pretty. We're like, look how beautiful this is.
Yeah. And then also out today is Hookshot by Kennedy Ryan, who is a past guest on this podcast that we all love. Van from Melanie Moreland, which is like, I think the fifth book in the Vested Interest series is out today. And She's All Mine by Ella Good. Do you guys know what that's about?
It's about a dancer and a ballerina. And they're in college.
They're girls?
No, a dancer and a fighter. And they're both in college. Sorry.
No, I was excited. But I like the fighter too, for sure. Okay, so that's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow with more. And okay, guys, Leah, tell them what to do.
Fuck your day up. Make today your bitch. Don't be a dick. We'll see you tomorrow.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Read me romance. Read me romance. Read me romance. Read me romance. You could take a look in a book, that's fine. Or you could sit back, relax, and unwind and read me romance. Read.